communicator, Dr. Stephen Ward.
This sound was recorded on the 29th of June, 1964, medium low distance.
Monday or a Tuesday or whatever it happens to be, is a happy day.
Oh, lovely.
I don't look upon it as an ordinary time or an ordinary day. I look upon it as a happy day.
Good. I thought perhaps you were referring to a happy day somewhere on your side, and I was quite interested, wanted to know why. Well, I'm very glad to hear that.
Well,
it's a happy day for me too.
It's all a happy time when I'm able to get through and have a few words.
We haven't got very many now till the medium goes away.
But we mustn't be selfish, must
we? Oh, I'm not.
Jolly, I mean, after all, I like to feel that he's having a change and a rest. I think he needs it, anyway.
Yes, he does.
So we mustn't be selfish, must we?
Oh, I'm not. He knows that I'm not selfish. He knows it.
So it's a pity he's not going for one day. I say it's a great pity he's going so soon. Pity he can't postpone it for a week or two. So we might be able to have an extra sitting or something to have a little extra opportunity.
You got my thought. I was not going to say that. I think he may, but I'm not going to take advantage. If he feels...
Well, I think we do take advantage. I suppose in a sense every time we try to communicate we're taking an advantage, because it must take a great deal out of him. From what I've been able to gather, it seems to me that mediums have a sort of something extra that other people haven't got. But
yes,
in taking it from them, I think it must be a great strain. Now, personally, I should imagine it's pretty awful being a medium in a sense, because
yes,
in a sense you're being used in a way which can, I should imagine, deplete you.
It can, but according to all you people on your side, they say that if he gets depleted, they can always...
Well, I wouldn't know that. I mean, I'm not up in all this, but I should have thought it, after all, it's some sort of living force which makes it possible, and I would have thought that that would be a great stress and strain upon a person's constitution, particularly if they've been doing it repeatedly, day
yes,
in and day out for years. I should imagine it must undermine their health.
That is quite true, because...
I could, mind you, I'm only telling you what I should have think. I mean, I may be wrong, but... Yeah, I would have thought so.
You're quite right.
I should have thought Marshall would be able to tell you all that from a medical point of view, but I can only assume that if a medium were being used constantly, the stress and the strain must be a tremendous thing. You know, I personally, I'd loathe to be a medium, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a sense, you're never yourself completely. I mean, after all, it's a life force that's being used.
Yes.
Otherwise, it couldn't even be possible. I mean, that's obvious, I think, that if you're going to reconstruct something which enables people to communicate, some sort of living something must be yours, which must come from the person concerned, which is the medium, and therefore that person must be using a great deal of vitality and energy, and something must be coming from them all the time, which must be in this ordinary sense or ordinary way very necessary to them physically, and therefore making use of it seems to me as if, well, you're using up their life's blood, you might say. I may be wrong.
Yes, I've always thought the same thing. That's why I think Dr. Marshall doesn't like him to do too much.
Well, I don't quite frankly know how a medium can. I mean, it seems amazing to me that, judging the little I know about it, just coming occasionally, talking to you, and the effort that has to be made, and all the work that goes on in the background, and just using some individual on your side, all the vitality that's being drawn from them for this. I mean, to do this perhaps two or three times a day or something, 6 days a week or whatever it is, seems to be madness. I mean, I may be wrong, but I would have thought doing this twice a week was enough for any man, but To do it twice a day for 6 days a week sounds to me madness itself. Well, I mean, I probably am wrong, I don't know, but it seems crazy to me.
You're quite right. And Dr. Marshall has warned him several times that the beauty of it is that if he does not listen and he keeps on having feelings, they just don't come through.
Well, I know that's a fact. I know that's a fact. Because once, twice, well, more than that, when yes. I've been here, Marshall said, look, old chap, I don't think we ought to do much tonight in anything. You know, I sort of been tipped off it's going to be a dud too, you know.
Yes.
And I always assume there's a very good reason. And sometimes, indeed, even, well, I can tell now when I look into the medium's auric emanation,
yes.
I can always tell when he's on top form or whether he's fit or well or depleted. And of course, he hasn't been very well lately, and I've known more or less that it's not going to be easy.
Yes.
Actually, it's an extraordinary business altogether. I don't really understand it.
Oh, you will understand everything. I'm waiting for you to understand everything. That will be the day. And I was very intrigued about that house that you wanted to get. I've been thinking.
Well, it wasn't exactly a house by any means. It's far from a house. It was a vast building and very impressive, and very imposing, and very beautiful. I'm hoping I shall eventually, of course, my curiosity getting the better of me, but at the same time I know I shan't be permitted inside it until such time as, well, I am ready, you might say.
Oh, how do I can get ready?
Oh, yes, it's all very well for you. I mean, all you've got to do is, well, just listen to me talk. I mean, I don't wish to be rude, but believe me, changing oneself, I mean, I know I've changed a great deal, but goodness knows what I'm supposed to do before I'm in a position to enter into that environment or whatever it is there, but presumably there's still much to happen to me. In fact, I don't really know what I'm supposed to do yet. In fact, all this business about becoming spiritual is rather frightening.
Well, you're doing very well.
Well, actually, now I can see the funny side even of that. I mean, this may sound sacrilegious to some people. I suppose it is that I can see differently, of course. But the point is that being spiritual is not as, well, as probably some people seem to imagine on earth. It's not sort of becoming goody-goody. It's appreciation of what is good.
Yes.
And doing good or becoming good, if I can put it like that, it all sounds awful while I'm saying it, but it becomes a natural instinct. It's following out a natural instinct within oneself to do that which is right and which is just and honorable, and sort of being, as it were, as much as anything, it seems to me, being in tune or in harmony and sort of being, I don't know, from within yourself, full of love, and that love in itself seems to, well, in a sense, open up doors. I don't know how to explain this, but it's not a sort of goody-goody thing.
No, I hope not. Good heavens. That would be terrible.
All I know is that I feel different, and I suppose that as one begins to feel differently, so one becomes different, and one sort of loses certain aspects of the old self. It seems to somehow disappear from you, and things that once seemed vital or important or necessary seem to become dim and almost, in fact, they are unimportant, and one's hardly conscious of them. I think it's losing from oneself certain aspects of one's nature, and the change which comes is such that you almost forget. In a way, I suppose one can drag those memories back. In fact, I have, of course. But I think the important thing is, in the initial stages of coming here, is to put those things behind you, not to think about them, not to hold on to the thoughts which evidently and certainly seem to hold one back. I think the whole idea is to release yourself from many things which you soon begin to realize have no meaning here. What had a meaning on earth and had a place no longer has a meaning or a place here, and in consequence, as you change in your outlook and your desires, you sort of desire things which somehow are so natural because they are the realities, and it's the sort of realities that you are seeking and the realities that you are understanding and clinging to, and they sort of lift you out of your old self, and you appreciate so much more fully because you can see and understand these things that matter more fully. they become a living reality to them. Whereas once perhaps they were a kind of dream, or they were aspirations, shall we say, you had on the earth, which under the circumstances of the material condition, they seemed almost impossible to bring into being. Here, the obstacles seem to be removed, and one does that oneself to some extent, but nevertheless, you come to realize that it's the realities that you're seeking, the realities that you're clinging to. And all the old things, often things which seemed realities of a kind, no longer seem so. In fact, they seem something which, important though it must have been in many instances on earth, no longer means anything here. You lose so much that no longer matters.
So, of course, I should think that would be quite natural, because you are so hampered on earth, whereas once you get your realization of your surroundings and so on, you're not hampered anymore.
Well, that's the
just
point.
Just allowed the freedom to go on.
You see, when you first come here, you're still very much, as it were, thinking, and indeed you still are very much, in the material sense, clinging to these old ideas and thoughts.
Yes.
And it's not easy to release yourself from them. And to you, shall we say, for the moment, they still have an important part to play. You still cling to those things. And the thing to do, of course, is to realize that they are no longer important. It's not easy to release yourself from these things. And I think also the circumstances of one's passing and the conditions
yes.
of just before one's passing
yes.
also play a very important part. That is why I should imagine that the gradual process of dying, which so many people dread, in its own strange way, is nature's way of helping an individual to gradually release their hold upon many of the things which seemed important at the time, but which really had no importance. Over here, you gradually drift, as it were,
yes.
Into this world, and you lose consciousness. And the point is that I think that it so much depends on the individual, of course. I mean, for instance, if you know about this subject, if you realize that death is a gateway to a great life, fuller life, with greater opportunity and greater love and greater understanding, greater tolerance. In other words, if you realize that this is a world where love predominates and that you will be surrounded by people who love also in return, and that they are people not only that you know, but people who come out of the sheer love of coming to help you and assist you and to show you the way, the whole atmosphere changes because of this. But and for a person who understands this truth before they come here, it's a different matter altogether. But the average person who doesn't know, who is in fear of dying, who
yes.
dreads the idea of dying, and clings to perhaps some sort of creed or dogma which they cling to, and it doesn't necessarily give them the satisfaction or the assurance they need. And then again, of course, you have many people who have no faith, no belief at all, and it's very difficult for them. But you see, this truth, this realization of life after death, when it's understood properly on your side, certainly must mean that person, when they pass, will have the most tranquil of passings, and that they will automatically know what to expect, and they will be received in such a way that there will be none of the difficulties that so many people have when they come here. It's very difficult for some people when they first come.
Oh dear, I wish I could take this recording over to all of my friends. Oh.
You see, after all, what is so important is that a person is as he or she thinks. And if they have strong fixed ideas, those ideas are not easily shifted, even on this side when they first come. In spite of the fact that they awaken, you might say, to a new life, they are still, in a thought sense, clinging to thoughts and ideas and religious convictions and all sorts of sort of strange feelings and ideas which have no bearing on the reality of life here. In other words, they cling to these preconceived ideas which are a hindrance to them
yes.
to help.
Yes.
And even when people, for instance, go to them and talk to them or try to convey to them the truth and the realization of what has transpired, they won't necessarily always accept it. In fact, they reject it, and they often think people have come to help them, even though it should be obvious to any intelligent person that person that comes is a good person. They, because of their narrow concept and belief, they will sort of push that person aside and reject that person, and won't accept that person at all. And indeed, in some instances, look upon that person as a devil or somebody who has come to mislead them.
Yes.
Because so many people, you'd be surprised, have this strong idea that they are going to be reborn, and they often are under the impression that they are going to have a physical body in a material world, and that there's going to be a great day of resurrection for them, and that they are in some peculiar way selected, that they are in some peculiar way different. And everybody else that doesn't think as they think, they assume that these persons are evil or bad spirits who come to try and take them from the right course. And that is the great trouble with a lot of these people. There are whole communities of people who live in a complete dream world, you might say, of their own, where they have their religious beliefs, where they worship, where they sing their hymns, and they have their prayer meetings, and in fact they conduct a life here which in some ways is very like their religious life on earth. And they really believe that they have been selected to be in a certain place, and they live in a world which for them, let me explain, is a world of great reality, and which for them is a world of complete happiness, because into that world of theirs, in a sense, no one else can enter. No matter who the person is who wants to help them, it's extremely difficult to combat this thought force which they give out, which is so strong and so powerful. They really believe that they are in a world which is specially constituted and made for them until such time as they will be resurrected, brought back onto the earth, and become God's elect. Of course, I'm talking here about the very narrow sect of people,
yes,
and they are obviously the worst. But I have been taken to one of these places, and I've been able to witness this life which they live, which for them is a very happy state of existence. I wouldn't like you to think it isn't, because it is. Because they are living in a world which is to them as real as yours is to you or mine is to me, and everything that happens in that world of their own making, of their own thoughts, is all as they desire it and wish it. And they live in a world which to them is a perfect form of existence. And actually anyone who goes there to try and talk to them or help them or to try to draw them out of it, really they're so rejected and so despised. In fact, you'd be surprised how sometimes people who go to help them are prayed for by these people, that they will be released from what they consider their sins, and that they will be allowed to become good as they are good. In other words, they really honestly think that they are good living people, and that they are God's special elected disciples or peoples, and that they will be able to return to earth eventually when the world comes to an end. Of course, I'm talking about a very special type of sect of people, but it's a vast place. I mean, I'm not talking about a few hundred people, I'm talking about literally thousands upon thousands,
yes,
of people,
yes,
who live in a world or a part of a world which is as real to them as yours is to you or mine is to me. But this is, of course, their own world which they themselves have created, which they helped to create when they were on earth, and which they continue to make a reality until such time as, of course, they may change their thoughts, which will serve with some may take centuries, I don't know, but it's quite possible.
Do you ever argue with them, or...?
Well, I haven't, because, quite frankly, I feel myself at the moment not capable of sorting myself out properly without trying to sort other people out. I feel it would be rather presumptuous of me, in a sense.
Yes.
But I'm terribly curious, and I'm terribly interested, and I suppose it's my natural curiosity, and also from that possibly I shall learn. Well, of course I shall learn, and it will help me tremendously in my own program. I am interested to go anywhere that anyone's likely to take me. In fact, the more people are prepared to come up to me and say, oh boy, would you like to go and visit so and so, there's a curious gang down there, you know, or there's this or that happening up there,
yes,
I'm all for it. I go anywhere, because I think that by seeing all these various different peoples and the way they live and the way they think and the way they act, I'm going to learn something.
Oh.
And possibly later on, when I'm more progressed myself and know how to go about things without sort of putting my foot in it, I might be able to do a bit of good for these people, wherever they may be or whoever they may be. I don't want to start moralizing. I don't want to start sort of trying to change anybody. I want to learn more of myself so that in consequence I possibly will change, so that I might in some measure at least be able to do some good somewhere else and help others. But I wouldn't be so, well, as I said, down stupid as to try. In fact, I wouldn't know what to say to these people yet. I wouldn't know how to deal with these people because, well, frankly, in their own way, they're very powerful.
Well, I love to hear him talk like that, Stephen. My goodness.
You must never diminish the power of the enemy. I don't mean to say that these people are my enemies. Don't misunderstand.
No.
But I mean, if you look upon the Orthodox Church in your world, whether it's Roman Catholicism or whether it is Buddhism or whatever it may be for that matter, in its own particular way, it has great power and has great sway over untold millions of people. And those people in themselves, because they think alike, like sheep, they're sort of automatically driven, you might say, to accept certain things. They become like an enormous army, which is very powerful. And it's not easy to combat such a force. I'm not saying it's necessarily evil. I'm not saying it's necessarily good. I think that one should get rid of the idea of evil and good, in a sense, because both those words, if one accepts those words, what they're supposed to mean, is rather stupid, because there in a sense isn't a demarcation line even between good and evil. That may sound odd to some people, but in a sense all good and evil is entwined and linked together,
yes.
Especially on earth. Over here it gets sorted out a bit, that's true, but point is that there's a lot of evil in goodness. I mean, you take people who are very sincere in their religion, you take religion, whatever it may be, there's a great deal of good in it. Good that is done by the individual and good that is done collectively by vast numbers of people. And there's good even in some of the teachings. But there's also a lot of evil all mixed up with it, and a lot of things that are not good that are very bad. You see, anything that is followed to such an extreme length must, in the end, turn to bad, even though it may start it out as good, you see. That's how it seems to me, because it seems to me that, for instance, in Christianity, in the beginning, it started out to be good. It was good. The essence was good. It was pure.
Yes.
But then it became changed. It became affected. It became affected by people's thoughts and their interpretation, and then, in consequence, their actions, and then the narrowness of thought, and then the dogma that crept in, and then people seemed to have the idea that they had the truth, and that if a person didn't believe or think as they did, that they should be made to believe, and if they wouldn't be made to believe, then they should be put to death or they should be tortured and so on. It seems to me that, you see, even in that which was good in the beginning, evil comes from it. But the evil comes through man trying to force himself upon another, force his ideas and force his religion or his faith or his belief, and it becomes an idiotic thing. A man becomes blinded by it, you see.
Yes.
And once a man becomes blinded by something that he believes in to such a degree, he becomes nullified, he becomes stupefied, he becomes like a piece of, an automaton. He becomes something which has no soul, you might say.
Yes.
It's as if he's been deadened, that he can't think for himself, he can't do anything for himself. It all has to be done automatically, and in consequence he loses his own identity. And the most important thing that a man has is his identity, and that seems to me the glorious thing about this life over here, that when you do begin to sort yourself out, when you do begin to realize the vital importance of this life and what it can become, then you have your identity. You don't become, and you are not part of some sort of peculiar sort of sect or organization or religion or whatever you like to call it. You don't necessarily believe this because it's the thing to do. You are seeking, you are searching, and in consequence you become a full individual in the true sense. You have your identity. You don't suddenly become although you in a sense you become part of a great mass of human life, as indeed we can never be anything else, we're all part of each other, but at the same time we do not lose our identity. Indeed, we build up our identity through our experience, and we become more and more an individual in consequence. That's why I think it's also remarkable and also wonderful that here, by learning, by experiencing, by opening up oneself to assimilate all that you can and gain all the knowledge and experience you can, and giving out all that you have from within yourself of love and affection and regard for all peoples, no matter who they may be or what they may think or how they may be, in some strange way it comes back to you a thousandfold, and in consequence you become more and more an individual. You retain something, and at the same time you lose the worser, and you retain that which is good, and that expands and grows, and you suddenly realize you're a different person. You feel different, you are different, and you have a greater power, a powerful... Well, even I've discovered that in a small way. I've discovered such a great deal in a short time that I have a power within myself that I never knew existed. When I was on Earth, I had some sort of realization of the power within, but I didn't understand it, and I didn't always necessarily use it or develop it, because I probably, in a sense, didn't know how to. But I knew that there was within me, as there must be within all people, a great possibility. And it is the possibilities within oneself that one should do something about when one is on earth, and not be in any way sort of held back by narrowness of thought. And that's what seems to me the biggest barrier in the world. There is this sort of nullifying, stupefying, stupid business of only believing what you're expected to believe, or what your parents believe, or what your parents taught, or what your church teaches you, or what your vicar tells you, or what is considered the right thing to do by society, and so on. The more you fetter yourself to all these stupid ideas, and these stupid creeds and dogmas, and this stupid sort of social habits, the more nullified and stupefied you become, the less an individual you are. And it seems to me that is the big drawback, that people become sort of automatons, robots, with no soul, and they don't give themselves the opportunity to do anything with themselves. They become just, well, what is commonly called, I suppose, accepted, because you're doing what everybody else is doing, and therefore you're right. Indeed, I think it's true to say that the people who are invariably more right are the people who don't conform. Those who conform are invariably the people who really have got very little character and very little within themselves, or at least they've got it there within them, they don't recognize it and do nothing about it. They're just sort of carbon copies of everybody else.
Puppets.
Well, I've learned a great deal. I sometimes get a little bit over-excited and over-anxious.
Yes, I'm very
But I do want you to realize, I know you do realize,
yes,
there's nothing more stupefying and nullifying and deadly than to conform.
Quite right, people. You never would conform when you were on the earth. And
well, I tried in a strange way. I may not have succeeded, but, and I don't mean just from the physical side, but
no.
I did try, without perhaps fully realizing it or even know quite how I was going about it. Perhaps I did it in a sense rather blindly, but I did recognize certain things within myself. Sometimes it's true I didn't always do what I might have done. In fact, there were times when I used to get very annoyed with myself. Sometimes I thought I was rather weak, whereas I should have been strong. Sometimes I felt that I might have accomplished a great deal more than I did. But I know that if you give vent to those natural instincts and those natural powers which man has within himself, then out of it can come and does come a great deal that is good. In my healing work, I can't explain this fully, but I do know this, that it wasn't just manipulation. I mean, it wasn't just a certain knowledge of the structure of the frame of the body and so on that mattered. Of course that was important. But I realize now that I was pouring from myself, without understanding it possibly, but nevertheless I was, some vital power, something which flowed from me, not only just sympathy for the person who's sick or ill, and not only just the sort of humane sort of feeling, but there was a great deal of love which I gave out to people. I mean, I didn't want to talk about myself, but the point is that money in itself was never a great thing with me.
Oh, I know that. I mean, I read that about
a lot of people that I did heal or endeavour to help. Money didn't always
you
matter.
You never thought about it, no.
Of course, those who could afford to pay naturally paid.
Yes.
But there were many who didn't and couldn't, and I was quite happy to help them. And believe me, in regard to this other business that caused all the trouble, as far as finance and money was concerned, it never entered my head.
I know. All that was important that I read about. Oh, wonderful. I love to hear these things.
I can quite honestly say that money never entered my head. In fact, I'm quite sure, and I'm sure I'm true in saying this, that I gave a Dunsight more than I ever got.
Of course you
did. And nobody certainly ever paid me for, in a sense, well, I didn't want to go into all that, but that part of it disgusts me and annoys me and upsets me more than anything else.
Oh, good old Stephen. Oh, good
old. You know, as I said to you before,
yes.
Coming here talking to you is the most wonderful thing because it gives me a kind of relief. I can't explain this to you, but
yes.
You might understand it, but it isn't that I can't speak to people here and that I don't speak to people. I do. And in fact, it's not even necessary to speak because the sympathy and the understanding and the love that flows almost, you might say, automatically, which it does from every soul here that has made any progress at all anyway, is such that one doesn't have to sort of say anything. One knows, one feels, and it's difficult to put into words, but when I come here, I feel that, well, in fact, let's put it like this, it's so
yes.
much simpler, that I get from you
yes.
the same feelings that I get from, say, Dr. Marshall and other people here that have been so wonderful to me. It's the same love and the same compassion and the same understanding and the same tolerance. It's all these things that roll into one that I get from you exactly the same.
And if
it weren't for that, I'm quite sure I wouldn't be able to come and speak. I wouldn't want to.
No.
And that's what amazes me, quite honestly. What amazes me at these so-called, these services, whatever you like to call them, where a medium is used,
yes.
the number of people that get in touch or have communication with people from this side, it amazes me that they get anything at all, because quite often, and I've been to some of these sittings, that there is no real compassion, there is no real deep abiding love and understanding and sympathy, either for the person that's communicating or for the medium that's being used. In fact, for them it's just a matter of getting into touch and getting as much as they can from it, which will benefit them in a material sense and not in a spiritual one. Frankly, how any medium stands up to this over a long period of time, I just don't know. I think it's a fantastic thing that any human being can stand up to the stress and the strain of what you call mediumship. Because I know jolly well, if it were me, I just couldn't. I mean, I just couldn't even... Well, I mean, I'd want to help people, but when I could see, as I do see now, and I'm sure a medium, if it's sensitive enough to realize, and certainly should be, could see the attitude of mind and the motives behind this communication that is required by some people on your side, it must be the most frustrating and disillusioning and disheartening. How anyone can continue to be a medium and work in the sense that, for instance, this medium does, amazes me. I think that they have a greater depth of feeling for humanity and for people than the average, much more so, because otherwise they couldn't do it. Frankly, I wouldn't want to be a medium, and I don't think anyone from this side who knows even what I know, and there are others who know much more than me, would, if they were honest, would say they want to be a medium. Of course we're glad to use mediums. Of course we take every advantage we can. I'm jolly glad. But at the same time, I feel more sorry for the medium than I do for anybody else.
Oh, yes, and the medium doesn't he feel very sorry for himself? I mean,
Well, he's quite justified in feeling sorry for himself.
Yes.
I think it would be most strange if it weren't. I think that it would be most peculiar for medium to sometimes feel sorry for himself. Because after all, there's the mercy of people on both sides, good and bad.
Yes, quite true.
Anyway, I must go, old dear. I'll overstep my time.
Oh.
Anyway, I'll come and speak to you again on Thursday.
Oh.
And if you have a Friday night, a balmy night, I'll be along.
All right. Oh, lovely, Steve.
Anyway, I must go. I'm getting the morning.
Okay. Cheers.
God bless. Bye-bye. See you on Thursday.
All right. Bye.